Ready, Charlie?
Yes.
I'll go ahead and call it order of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for July 29th, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I see we've got a couple people here that have requested to speak. We'll hold these until the end at the for items that weren't on the agenda, if that's okay, gentlemen. Public comment section number one, the comment period for public to address topics on today's agenda. I don't see anybody move towards the mic. Consideration of minutes from 7:22 of 14.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The minutes have been approved. Personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. The claims.
You want to take this one?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll move approval of the claims.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Claims have been approved. Consent agenda. We need to add utility permits 1504 and 1505, road closures 1508 and 1509.
1509. Move approval with noted changes.
And I second.
Motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. That takes us down to agency reports, youth and shelter services.
Okay.
Moving quickly.
Hey,
today.
Moving quickly.
Got to keep up.
No, George.
Well, not yet.
We may be moving too fast this morning for George.
That's all right. You all can fill in.
Well, I'm Barb Biersner. I'm the mentoring coordinator for Youth and Shelter Services. So I will report on the mentoring program, and also Jane Larkin. Who is our prevention programming director, coordinator, is unable to attend due to a family emergency.
Oh, no.
Her report's very thorough, so if after you read through that, if you have any questions, you could feel free to contact.
Oh, shoot. George, you can leave now. Oh.
Yeah.
They said they had it under control.
Feel free to contact Jane or Jerry Bug if you have any questions in regards to that. So with the mentoring program, I'm not used to going this soon. Kind of caught me off
Normally
guard.
We get George setting it all up for us.
I know. I will. Do you want to hand those to them? Okay, my report's included in your packet. For Story County, we ended the year with 199 active matches. Active means that they were meeting on a regular basis. We served 230 children in Story County. That means some of those matches terminated throughout the school year due to maybe the child moving, the mentor moving, or some other various reasons. In my report, talks about our events. We had our end-of-the-year bingo night, which is always a very simple event but very popular. We had 100 matches that attended that event. We have that at the Ames Middle School. They give us that space, which we very much appreciate. And all our prizes this year, every child leaves with a prize, and they were all donated by Kohl's, Kohl's store. Our outcomes, our end of the year, we track outcomes pre and post. One thing we ask the mentees is, since they were matched with their mentor, how do they feel? And they felt their grades were, 86% thought their grades were better. This is how the mentees feel. This isn't how the teachers are reporting it, just how they feel. So 86% thought they had better grades after they had a mentor. 87% were more interested in school. 70% said they got along better at home after having a mentor. 80% said their friendships were better. And 89% said they were more interested in learning new things after having a mentor. 100% of the kids said that we made a good match. So under 100% were happy with the match that we made. excuse me. I'm just, all this is in your report, so I don't want to get in too much detail. Now, we do ask the teachers pre and post, too, how the kids are doing academically. So this is more concrete on how they're doing. And 44% of the children in the program maintained or improved a positive academic level. So they either maintained, stayed where they were, or improved.
Okay.
53% maintained or improved their attitude and behavior in the classroom. So they either stayed the same or they went up.
Okay.
Okay. And relationships. We also asked the teachers about the relationships the kids have in the classroom. And 60% maintained or improved their relationships at school. We also track classroom avoidance. We started doing that a few years ago. We found that a lot of the kids that are referred to our program are those kids that want to get out of the classroom for various reasons. They go to the restroom and they never come back, or they want to go see the school nurse numerous times during the day and kind of just hanging out in the hallways, avoiding the classroom. So pre-65% were reported having classroom avoidance or not having classroom avoidance issues, and post 71%, so it went up.
Oh, good.
11% of the kids were, their classroom avoidance was reduced. Attendance, we don't see a lot of changes in attendance. A lot of times attendance is not a factor that the kids have much control over. We see a lot of times, especially with the younger ones, it's whether or not the parent gets them to school. So attendance, we don't see a real difference on attendance. Then we also do a 13 question survey. We call it our asset survey. And that's in your packet that Nicole just handed you. And we have various questions. We have the kids answer pre and post. And we did see significant improvement in four of the categories, or four of the questions that were significantly higher. Number three, which was, I always feel included in activities. So post, there it was a lot higher. The kids felt a lot more included in activities after being matched. Number four, I understand the rules that adults set for me. Number eight, I get along well with friends. And 10, I feel good about my future. But if you look at the chart, you will see there were increases for all the questions, but those four were significantly high. Significantly, I can't say the word, higher. You know what I mean.
What type of setting is used to gather this information? Is this something that is done by an independent person or staff rather than a mentor?
Our staff, our facilitators, do all the surveys pre and post with the children, and we have a specific script they follow for this this asset, mentee asset survey. So the kids are surveyed all, the facilitator is asking the same questions the same way.
Right. Good.
So it's, and then we have Tony Vander Zill, who used to work for the Ames School District. Vander Zyl puts together all our data. We give him all the raw data, and he puts it all together for us.
Huh. Likes to feel important.
Yes, he does.
I know, he's a good
now
guy.
He does it from the lake. He lives in
good
Clear
guy.
Lake now.
Yeah,
so
I
don't feel too sorry for him. We had a summer program this year, our first summer program. It was in conjunction with the Ames Summer School Enrichment Program Free Lunch and the Nevada Enrichment Free Lunch Program. So we had mentors, returning mentors, had the opportunity to continue mentoring with the child during that time, during the lunch time in Ames and Nevada. And we also had the opportunity to make new matches. We made 10 new matches in Ames and 2 returning matches. So we had 12 mentors and children meeting in Ames, and we had 6 returning mentors meeting with the children in Nevada. So fairly successful for our first year. It was a pilot program. Those 10 new matches that were made in Ames were made under the assumption that that mentor would continue on in the fall because, a six-week match is detrimental, more detrimental than good. So those matches will continue. So it just gave them a head start. So in the fall, that mentor will continue on meeting with that child during the school year. So the funding from that came from United Way. It was very successful. We plan on continuing that. I was just in discussion with Jerry Bug about possibly even expanding that to maybe Gilbert next year in conjunction with our kids' club sites and the kids that are going to kids' club. So that's what happened this summer. I think that's about it. Do you have any questions?
Outstanding.
The comment on your program in Nevada, I have a daughter that volunteered for that.
Uh-huh.
Every morning.
Is she going to be able to continue on in the fall with the...
She's going to go back to the University of Iowa.
In college. Okay. So, well, I thank her for her volunteering and her giving
her time.
I think
it was a very successful program. I know I talked to Barb Bittman about it, and they were all excited. A little anxious before it started, didn't quite know what to expect, but other than a lot of kids.
Yeah. There were a lot of kids enrolled in both those sites this summer. A lot of kids. Well, thank you.
My name is Nicole Hansen, and I'm going to report on our after-school programs. So I'm going to start with the Elementary Kids Club program. We had a very successful year at our programs in Slater, Gilbert, and Story City. We served 313 children, which was up from last year. So that was great, up 5% from the previous year. And we do surveys very similar to what Barb does. So we have a teacher survey that they complete at the beginning and end of the school year, and the teachers had reported that 97% of our participants maintained or increased positive social interactions. That's what they saw in their classroom. 97% of our participants maintained or increased positive academic performance, and 93% maintained or increased their positive behavior in the classroom. So we were very excited to see those results from the teacher. And then we also do a survey with the youth, again, similar to Barb's. And the youth had reported that 87% of them maintained or increased positive relationships with adults, which is one of the things we strive for in our programs. And 96% of them maintained or increased their understanding of the question, how wrong do you think it is for someone your age to use tobacco, drink alcohol, or use other illegal drugs? So throughout the year, we do some prevention curriculum with the kids, and we're pleased to see that result. In addition, we also do parent satisfaction surveys at the end of the school year, and 94% of the parents indicated that they were very satisfied with the programming that they had received. And then there are some comments pulled from the satisfaction survey that you can read through. We have had a very successful summer, so just to tell you a little bit about our summer program, this summer's theme was big ideas. The kids have spent the summer learning about inventions and doing some inventing themselves. Had a great time taking field trips to places like the Science Center where they could see and interact with some inventions. And I have brought our summer brochure for you all to take a look at.
Outstanding.
Barb. Okay, and then our teen club programs don't run through the summer, but they finished up a very successful school year last May. And we served 35 youth at our Ballard Teen Club program and 24 youth at our Collins Maxwell Teen Club program. The activities that they focus on are educationally based and also help the youth develop life skills and leadership skills. And one of the most important goals for Teen Club is their service learning projects. One of the outcomes we look at is that we're promoting the youth leadership skills, and that's really done through our service learning projects. So Ballard spent the year focusing on an anti-bullying campaign, and the youth got very into this and created a video with some of their peers within the middle school and showed that to fifth grade students, and they even wrote the discussion questions for the teachers. In Ballard, 26 youth completed 196 hours of service learning. We also like to track how much of the project is completed by the youth and not the facilitator doing things for them. And 91% of the tasks involved in that service learning project was completed solely by the youth. So they were very invested in that. And then in Collins Maxwell, they did a project on helping support the military families and their community. And they had 19 youth complete 39 hours of service learning, and they completed 96% of all of the tasks involved in their project. So those are some of the things we track with the middle school after school programs. We also do surveys with those youth, and 93% of the Ballard participants and 82% of Collins Maxwell participants maintained or increased their social interactions throughout the time in our program. And we do parent survey and participant satisfaction surveys as well, and I've listed some of the comments from both the parents and the youth. They really value the program in their communities.
Andy, thank you.
Thank you for your support. Any questions about the program?
No. Thanks.
Thank you.
Adam, you've got a pretty good color copier, though. I like that.
Good morning, George.
Morning. We're usually last on the agenda. This is a pleasure. Thank you for putting
you
us
last.
Up.
We're just really short today.
It's a very short agenda today.
My goodness. This is unusual. Thank you very much for the year of support you gave YSS through funding through asset and juvenile court. This is our end of year report. It's our last quarter of the year. And may I say that we had a very successful year at YSS. Most of our programs have been at capacity and some over capacity, and I think we've done the best work ever. So the report I'm going to give you now is the data on the last year, and maybe Barb or Nicole, if you could come up and help me hand out things, sit right by me. So, and then those who in the audience that would like a copy of the report, just raise your hands, but we'll start with the supervisors. If you look at Rosedale Shelter, which again was the first emergency youth shelter in the state of Iowa, we have really seen a large increase in the number of Story County kids placed in the shelter. The first column shows 58 youth for 953 days served all of last year. Or the year before, and the year that just ended, and we're in a new year now, July 1, we served 78, so an increase of 20, but look at how the days have increased to 1,453. In a minute, I'll be asking you to consider taking two action steps, and I know you won't be able to consider it at this meeting, but I would like to request a special favor to help us at Rosedale Shelter. Right now, I'll just stick with the data that, and as you can see, we've really increased also at Rosedale Shelter the number of young people who were diverted from out-of-home placement, 54 were diverted last year, and this year 90. So those are mostly mediation cases where we get the kid back home within 24 hours. If you look down below under the counseling heading, you will also see a big increase in individual therapy from 126 Story County cases to 246, big increase in family therapy by almost 100, and then assessments have really gone up to 274 assessments. That's an increase of 100 from the year before. Then if you jump to crisis intervention, big increase there. And then at the very bottom, I'd like to spend a moment talking about our psychiatric medication management program. That has greatly expanded. We're using telehealth for medication management. We're the one of the very few providers in central Iowa that accepts Medicaid for medication checks. This is all carried out by psychiatrists who are on live video with the patient and or the client in our case, and then nurses in the room that we employ. But look at that, 109 up to 299, and then assessments 153 up to 283. This is a program we are losing money on. We're not getting adequate payment through Medicaid, and there is really no source of money to make up the difference. We're losing about $2,500 a month on that program, but it's one we just cannot stop providing because there would be a lot of kids who are severely emotionally disturbed that aren't getting the help that they need through medication or psychiatric consultation. If you flip over, you will see all of our prevention programs and volunteer programs. Kids Club is reported there that you just heard from Nicole. And then, you know, our child safety, our mentoring program, you just heard from Barb. But all the other programs are listed there as well, and the numbers have also generally increased. Now to the request for Rosedale. This is a proposal that we would like the Board of Supervisors to consider. I know if you put it on the agenda for consideration, I'll come back and give you a more full presentation. This is a funding request to the Board of Supervisors for additional funding, and we are proposing that the $30,000 that you had placed in this year's budget for the Toledo Juvenile Home, which is now closed, and there's no money in the state budget to reopen that program, so it is definitely closed for the next year. And the $30,000 that was budgeted for Toledo, we would like to respectfully ask that the Board of Supervisors consider transferring those funds to assist us at Rosedale Shelter. And I'll just paraphrase our YSS request, but just to preface it with the information that we did go to the Asset Executive Committee and get their permission to come directly to you with this request. They did give that permission. We also approached juvenile court, and they will not oppose the transfer of the $30,000 as long as it is only used for safety upgrades at the shelter and repair and maintenance, and that is exactly what we're asking for. Our client population in the last 3 to 4 years has really changed. As you know, a lot of shelters have closed because of funding cuts. At one point in Iowa, we had 24 shelters and almost 400 beds. We're now down to 190 beds and 14 shelters. So 10 shelters have closed, including 3 in central Iowa. We're one of only 2 in central Iowa. And so the kids that are being placed or referred are the most troubled kids that we have seen in our entire history. What we're seeing, as you'll note in the fourth paragraph, second paragraph, is increasingly these placements present severe mental health problems. There, a lot of them are SED, which is severely emotionally disturbed. Our runaway risks are 1 in 10 are sex offenders or identified or charged with some kind of sexual offense. and an increasing number of physically aggressive. And the one facility that we're talking about has served over 7,500 kids. I would like to compare that to C.Y. Stevens, which I was just in the other day, and you could fill it three times with the number of kids, every seat filled, that we have seen in that one facility. So the facility is getting worn out. We have in our strategic plan placed a priority on building a new shelter that is better equipped to deal with the troubled kids that we are seeing. However, if all goes well, we have to do a feasibility study to raise the funds and find the property. All of that will take time, and we wouldn't at the earliest have a new shelter until 2018. So we have to do something between now and then. Just to let you know, even if you do invest in helping us upgrade the security at the shelter, even after we move the shelter, if we're successful in our strategic plan goal, we would still utilize it, but it would be transitioned into a halfway house for recovering youth who are 18, 19, 20. There is nothing like that, actually, in the entire state. There are no halfway houses for young adults. Either that, or we would transition it into a TLP, or a transitional living center, of which we have quite a few in central Iowa. This would be our largest, though. In summary, are requesting that you consider moving this funding to Rosedale Shelter, and attached is a list of estimated costs and what we would do to increase the safety, security, and improve the maintenance of the shelter.
I have a couple questions, George.
Yes, please.
Is it appropriate to ask now? First of all, because we're talking about the Toledo home situation and
right.
some of the changes that have come about, what role does DHS has to play in this decision at this point in time?
Well, as you know, DHS director and the governor recommended, or they are the ones that closed Toledo. There was nothing put in the budget to reopen it. The governor's decision and Mr. Palmer's decision are before the Supreme Court, but even if the Supreme Court rules that they did not have the authority to close the facility, there's no money in the budget. So as far as DHS's role in seeing that money moved, I don't think they have any role.
Well, I ask that only because, again, we're talking about a transfer of youth from that in many cases either were housed elsewhere in
right.
other parts. And while I'm not opposed to us exploring the feasibility of that, I'd like to make sure that we clearly, take a look at the various entities that have what I consider oversight over juvenile placements. Mm-hmm. And then the other question I would have would be, this would be something, I know you said that you've talked to the executive committee, as that executive committee.
Right.
Have you had a chance to sit down one-on-one yet with Deb Schulroth yet, our CPC director, community service director?
Yes, she was actually at the executive committee.
Right. What I would probably want to have, if the board is decides to bring this forth and put it on the agenda for consideration, is maybe to have one of us, and I would certainly be willing to do that, and sit down again with you and Deb, and to kind of go through again some of the issues that you're outlining here, so that we feel that we have most of the the questions or concerns answered as we try to move forth. Is it my understanding or is it your understanding that currently the $30,000 right now, it comes through the asset process? So these are Story County dollars that is generated towards a Toledo home. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it goes through the asset process to the extent that we present it to asset, but it's in the juvenile court budget.
But it's in the juvenile court. Okay. So we would want to have that collaboration
right.
as well, okay, with that entity.
But you say juvenile court has already stated they would not oppose the transfer
right.
of this as long as it was for the safety.
Right.
Correct. Rick, thank you.
Right.
And Wayne, I think it's completely appropriate for you as our liaison to Deb Shildroth for you and her to get together and meet. I would want, if we were going to consider anything like this, I would want to make sure that Deb was here along with you.
Oh, absolutely.
So that we can go
absolutely.
Through the full consideration. But I got a couple issues. One, I don't understand why you're just asking for $30,000. It looks to me like you've got $57,000 in needs just for the upgrades. The second thing is you just told us that psychiatric services, you're losing $2,500 a month. And it looks to me like we are in at least a borderline crisis situation, if not a full crisis situation, in some of these increases. So, George, what I want you to tell me is, do you guys have any feel at all behind what's driving these increases? Clearly, the closure of Toledo and some other group homes is driving our increase at Rosedale. But what's driving the rest of the numbers here?
Well, you're correct. We did have, when they closed Toledo, we did have several of the females that were housed there at YSS. In fact, two of them were at Rosedale Shelter. The increase in the mental health problems, and especially SED, severely emotionally disturbed, it's phenomenal. And I think there are several factors that are taking place. For one, there are fewer beds, fewer group homes. The PMIC, Psychiatric Medical Institutes for Children, are completely full with waiting lists. As you know, there was a waiting list for the waiver, the mental health waiver program last year. That's the outpatient program. Last year, the governor had vetoed $6 million that was needed to get kids off the waiting list, and this year he did not veto that. So the waiting list will be ratcheted down, but there are, even with that $6 million, there will still be kids on the waiting list. So what happens is that those kids on the waiting list who act out at home are coming into the shelters. There are 10 fewer shelters than there were 3 years ago. You know,
so they're not getting the services.
Outpatient.
Not getting the outpatient services they need. So now it escalates to the point that they've got to come in to a residential program, and there's fewer beds.
And the residential programs, that the only one, the PMICs are full. The group homes, they have cut back the beds. So we are in the shelter programs. In fact, right now we're having a meeting at the State Capitol building to talk about what you are calling a crisis. We are in crisis in shelters around the state. We're full almost all the time. And we have very disturbed kids that are waiting to get into a psychiatric medical institute we're dealing with at the shelter level.
So not only more, but more troubled as well.
This potentially could be an area that needs to be brought to the regional board.
I agree.
Definitely. Yeah.
I see two issues.
The reason that this is a key is this was something that I was going to mention a little bit later in my report. In my meeting yesterday with Director Palmer and Schultz at ISAC, a lot of discussion came about was this requirement that all counties and regions has to have a 25% ending fund balance by June 30th, FY15. And the reason for it is some counties have had an excessive fund balance, and they wanted tied, legislators wanted tied to services. Well, DHS Director Palmer believes that anything that is done in the crisis arena has a lot of potential for funding because it could be tied to a cost settlement through Medicaid and so forth.
Oh, great.
And so I think this is an area that and there's Polk County, I think, is one of the few that has a pretty aggressive crisis center now. But I think this is something that the regions are starting to look at and talk about. And I think it would behoove us to not to eliminate them in terms of bringing forth a proposal for consideration. As Rick said, there's obviously some needs here beyond just the 30,000 that we're talking about. And so I would just suggest that we maybe expand our thinking and seeing about bringing something to the table.
And Wayne, I couldn't agree more, and I would view the longer term part of this as resting completely with the region. I mean, we need to continue to push these things with the region, but we've got a secondary component right now, which is we've got a crisis in Story County right now based on this, and I think it's not only completely appropriate, and it's necessary for this to get on our agenda for consideration as quick as possible. And again, what I'm going to throw out there is I don't know what we would do with this, but I don't believe the $30,000 request is enough, because I see $57,000 in safety repairs that need to be made at Roselle Shelter, and I see $30,000 in the psychiatric services dollars that there's no way to make up. And I'm not sure that 100% of that request is appropriate for us. I think some of it may reside with AIM, some of it, but this is one of those situations where I don't believe anybody could have projected that we were going to see numbers like this. And so we need to dig in and deal with it.
Well, I think George could projected that when they closed Toledo and all the other shelters around the state were starting to close. We have been one of the marquee counties that have had programs to address this particular population, and naturally, I think because of the programs that we have, you would expect that people would want to look at possible placements here, and so I
think you're right. Yeah. And let me rephrase what I said. Instead of not being able to project it, we clearly did not budget to accommodate this.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so while it feels a little like chasing our tail, I think it's completely appropriate for us to dig back in and say, wait a minute, okay, I understand that we just started the budget year, but there's some realities that we're looking at for FY15 that we did not build in to the budget, and it's our role to dig into that now and see what we can do with it.
Shelters and the whole child welfare system have become the de facto children's mental health system in Iowa. And keep in mind all the changes that took place, the regional and all of that, that really we have not defined a children's mental health system in Iowa yet. There has not been any legislation that really impacts children's mental health. So we in child welfare are the dumping ground. We are the place where those kids are going, and we're doing the very best we can. Now, one change that has taken place is Affordable Care Act, and kids now, you know, getting some insurance through their parents and other means so that they can come forward and get help with mental health problems. And as you know, we and Ireley Ball were designated by Magellan as an integrated health home. And we just started that program up the 1st of July, so there's going to be some relief through that program. And here is our first official update on that program. This program is not funded by Story County or Asset. It's completely funded by Magellan with money through the Affordable Care Act Medicaid funds. We started the program on July 1, and Ireley Ball is serving the adults, and we are serving the children. We have written and signed seven agreements with other caregivers in Central Iowa, including Center Associates, the Children's and Families of Iowa, Community Support System, that would be DEPS program, and Community Services, Ireley Ball, and Plains Area Mental Health. We're in the process of seeking other memorandums of understanding so we can coordinate with others as well. Ongoing conversation with targeted case managers, those are the counselors that are seeing the waiver cases that have such a long waiting list. We were given over 1,000 names of severely emotionally disturbed kids in a three-county area. We're going to do Boone County, Story County, and Dallas County. No, not Dallas. We have Green. Ireley Ball has Dallas. We don't, so excuse me there. And so we have sent a mailing to 739 where we actually had correct addresses. And since the 1st of July, we have registered 56 youth. Our goal is to sign up 400. This is a new case management program that will bring together the physical health needs of kids along with their behavioral health needs, which would include substance abuse and mental health, and we will be coordinating those needs for those kids. So we had two public forums and, you know, trying to educate the community about this new program. So there is a little hope that some of the problems that we're seeing in the children's mental health area, some of them hopefully will be better addressed through this new case management program.
George, a question. When we talk about integrated homes and tying it in with targeted case management and so forth, these are all state-run programs, and they're not dependent on federal funds and so forth, as far as you know?
No, these are Medicaid funds that the state of Iowa gives to Magellan, which is a managed care company.
Right.
So they are.
So I think they are part of the federal dollars. And so one of the cautions,
yeah,
is that the terminology, and going back to Rosedale, is Rosedale considered what is called a I'm thinking of the RCF. Is it considered in the same light?
No.
As that? Okay, because as you know, the residential care facilities, the federal mandate saying anything, yes, over 15,
right,
they are asking counties to reduce already.
Yes.
And that means, where do you move those populations,
right,
that have been served in some of the larger counties? And this is really creating a,
yeah,
potential another crisis.
Yes, it is it's an immediate crisis. That's not impacting Rosedale. It,
right,
is impacting our youth recovery house and 712 house.
Okay.
Fortunately for us, I mean, they will not provide Medicaid dollars for any facility over 16 beds.
Right, right.
And now they're, and both of our facilities are 16 beds. So however, they're also interpreting for the first time that any one agency cannot have more than one 16-bed facility. And actually, we, for the second time ever, we have just closed our 712 house and moved the boys into the youth recovery house while they try to sort this mess out. Our do-nothing Congress isn't helping either. I mean, everybody from across the country is complaining about these new rules, and nothing is changing. So fortunately for us, our client population was down enough that we could combine both sexes into one house. And also we needed to try to consolidate so that we could do some work at 712 just in cleaning, and, you know, it's been used for a long time. So it's not anything like what we need to do at Rosedale. It's basically just cleaning the house and getting it in better order. And in the fall, our numbers go up, and hopefully by then they'll have this worked out. So we are in one facility. Wayne, this is impacting us. We know all about it, and it makes no sense. so many
unfortunate when we are in these meetings, they never talk about the impact on juveniles. It's assumed that we're talking about the adult population all the time, and the reality of it is that there's crisis areas, you know, really impacting our youth as well.
We're one of the few residential treatment programs for chemically dependent youth that is inpatient, and this is a memo I just sent out. It just came out yesterday to all our supporters, and you're among our chief supporters, so I wanted to share it with you. I decided to write up what happens when a kid graduates, what takes place at a graduation from a drug treatment program. So here are a series of photos of kids recently who graduated and a description. And on the reverse side, written in the parent's own words, we didn't request this, she just sent it out of the blue, tells the story of Wyatt, who went through our drug treatment program inpatient last year, and 12 months later, by some miracle, graduated from high school, and the miracle was he was clean and sober. And so these are the mom's own words with the graduation invitation that was sent. We have served kids from 98 of 99 Iowa counties. We are very proud that we have these beds and have had such good outcomes with the kids in that program. It's really, we are the only single-sex inpatient drug treatment program on the community level. All the others are co-ed, and now we are co-ed. But it's temporary. It's just for the summer. We're hoping to work through these problems with the regulations so that we can reopen 712. One last request, well, I had two, Rosedale was one. The second one is coming from the YSS Public Policy Committee and also the Story County Prevention Policy Board. I have the minutes of their last meeting. The motion that they passed reads as follows. They have moved that the Story County Board of Supervisors be requested to consider a ordinance, countywide ordinance, to ban the use of electronic cigarettes or the devices in public places. So it would basically follow the ban on utilizing tobacco products, and it would extend it to electronic devices. We greatly appreciate the Board of Supervisors' leadership role last year in the electronic cigarette ordinance that you were considering. As you know, the state heard the message, and we were very pleased that they did pass, though it was limited, new state law that went into effect the 1st of July, such that minors cannot possess or purchase these products. As you know, there have been several cases just recently reported by law enforcement where minors were actually picked up for utilizing the electronic cigarette devices, the vape devices, and in two cases, they were smoking marijuana oil, not anything that was a, you know, had THC content, or I mean it had marijuana in it, wasn't the things that they buy at the vape stores. So this is a growing trend among our minors, and it doesn't smell like marijuana. Also doesn't have the smoke, but you're still getting the THC in your lungs, and in fact in a much higher concentration than smoking marijuana. This is an increasing problem, especially for states around that are near Colorado. They're making this oil by the gallon, and it's leaving the state. It's pretty valuable stuff. So we would like to, it's not because of the THC, but we would like to thank you for your action last year, and then the state took action. I think they heard enough from counties like Story County such that they decided to make it statewide. However, their law does not go far enough. So we'd like you to consider a new ordinance countywide to ban electronic cigarette devices in all public places.
Well, George, I'm sure that as you, as the group brings something for us, we would probably follow the same path that we followed in other situations, working with our civil council and then trying to look at what would be the process that we would take to move forward. Obviously, you know, there will be those who are feeling that perhaps we are being overreaching, and then there are those that obviously, you know, believe that, yes, we should be taking a stronger stand and so forth. So we would want to certainly make sure that we did due diligence again as to how we would move forward. But I certainly don't have any apprehension or problems with you guys bringing forth your proposal to us for consideration. We just need to follow the process that we've used in the past, I believe.
Has the same request gone to the City of Ames?
The same request is on its way to the City of Ames. It hasn't been delivered yet.
Super. George, thank you. I believe there's three items I'd like us to deal with. First one is, I believe that the funding request transferring the $30,000 needs to get on our agenda as soon as possible. As soon as possible to me, Wayne, means you visit with Deb and Lisa Markley and make sure that we've got our ducks in a row so that we can come back and consider it. George, we'd sure like you to be here when we consider
yes,
that.
Yes, thank
that
you.
That would be the first one. Second request would be, Wayne, just more formalizing what you just said, that we refer the request for the new ordinance to our civil council and let it run its course as we work through that. And then the third one would be, George, more for you. I'd like you to look and see if there's more than this 30. I want to deal with the 30 on its own, but I want to look if there's an appropriate way to make a request of us to fund the rest of the safety improvements and possibly, and I don't know the funding stream for the psychiatric services, the telepsychiatry, but look at if there's an appropriate way to make a request of us. I'd like you to work with Deb a little bit and see if there's a secondary request
that
can
come. Well, we have tried through the asset process, and it has we have not been successful in the last 2 years. So we will try again this year. We're actually right now already working on our asset request for next year. So we will ask again.
That's one. The second one is the additional $27,000 that you've identified for the
wonderful. Thank you.
And again, I don't. Maybe there's not an appropriate way to get that to us, but I'd sure like to consider it if there is a way.
Thank you. So would we? I'm going to end with an item that isn't impacting Story County as much as it's impacting the entire state. But just to tell you about our leadership role in the state, we are the agency that provides the Iowa Aftercare Services Network statewide, and this is for kids aging out of foster care, group care, shelters, who turn 18 and often become homeless. They 50% have not graduated high school, and we've been providing this program since 2006, and it's called the PAL program, Preparation for Adult Living. It has been highly successful. The outcomes compared to kids who did not get the aftercare services are just incredible, and we're very proud of it. And the PAL program is totally state funded. It's the only major increase in child welfare funding. When the big public outcry took place about Toledo, we reminded the legislature that kids aging out of Aldora and Toledo were not eligible for the aftercare program. So here are kids who are seriously disturbed or delinquent, and it's a road to the state prison system because there was no aftercare. They age out at 18. They leave Aldora. Often they're labeled back at home as a criminal. They may not even they've burned their bridges with their family, if not their whole community. A lot of them end up homeless, and they turn to, a lot of them haven't graduated from high school. Where do they go? They turn to crime. And then they wonder why so many of them, why the recidivism rate is so high. So we went to legislature, and this is when Toledo was still open, and we got several of our legislators to write a bill to expand the aftercare services network to include kids from Toledo and Aldora. Of course, in the meantime, Toledo closed, but the legislature added $800,000 in state money, really the biggest increase of funding anywhere in the child welfare budget. And so now we are, believe it or not, tomorrow we're going to hire two full-time people, one for the AMP program, which also expanded, and the aftercare program, to work at the state training school for boys and all detention centers, because kids aging out of detention also were not eligible. So we're just getting the word out to all the detention centers, like Aldora, which is right across down the road from the state training school. And we're going to all the other detention centers. I was not aware of how many detention beds we have. We have 100 more detention beds. No, more than 100. We have 244 detention beds, 190 shelter beds, and none of those kids were eligible for aftercare. So all of those and the Aldora boys. And most of the money is spent on the youth themselves through stipends and carrot at the end of the stick is to get their stipend and get their help. They have to be in school doing well and or working or both. It's just starting, and I'm just really proud that YSS has taken the lead here, and we're very proud of our legislature. So this is our first kind of announcement about the new Aldora program and detention program, and just for you to know that there are 11 agencies who are providing this statewide. These boys from Aldora will be going all over the state. We'll have someone in their own home community who will follow up and provide this for them. I really think it's going to make a difference in a lot of lives. We don't have that many kids at Toledo from Story County because we have so many community-based programs. But this program will be there for them, both those coming out of Aldora and also those coming out of detention centers. So it's a big step forward for child welfare. With that, I conclude my report. And again, thank you for your support this last year and also consideration in the coming months of the two action requests.
Thanks, George.
Yeah, and George, and I'll try to follow up, too, and look at my calendar and Deb's and yours and try to see if we can't coordinate some time to get together and move this process forward. Okay, thank you.
That takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meetings. Wayne.
I met with Deb yesterday briefly right before going to Des Moines to meet with Director Palmer and Schultz regarding any issues or questions that I should bring forth that would have regional implications. And I was fortunate to be able to share some of those thoughts. But overall, the thing that was very positive that Deb reported was the appreciation of the work that a group of community service directors were having with DHS over this disputed codes. As you know, for the last year or two, there's been some differences in terms of how the codes that were being used that would provide direct reimbursement. They were the CPT codes as well. And I heard Director Schultz also, Palmer and Schultz say how well they think they have come together and now came up with an agreement between the two groups, and they seem to be on the same page now. So moving forward, a lot of the controversy that had been there is going to hopefully be smoothed out. And so I think the regional groups, this is a collaborative group of all of the chiefs of the various regions meeting together with Director Palmer, addressing a lot of these issues, and they then established a work group to work particularly on the CPC codes, and I think that was a very positive thing, and Deb felt extremely comfortable with the direction that that's taking, and as you know, her role now has been elevated a little bit as she's taken over for John Grush for our region to represent the region on the statewide coalition. The other area we kind of talked a little bit about was the update of the 28E agreement, particularly for Story County. We made the corrections, the revisions. They had not, they've received it, but they've not had a chance to really take a look at it yet. I was assured that they will try to expedite that. I told them it would be very helpful for us as we begin to move forward to know if there are still some issues, that there were some disagreements, if there wasn't enough information that DHS was looking for in the 28E agreements. And so I got some assurance that that would be the case. And then we did spend quite a bit of time talking about that 25% ending fund balance and its impact, and said that, and I suggested that ISAC make sure that at our supervisors' fall school and others, that supervisors are aware that as of 2015, it also involves counties as far as their mental health funds, is that that 25% is the legislature has passed it, that that's what is expected. Now, that means that, yes, it could be less than that. If it's more than that, there has to be a pretty compelling reason why, and there has to be services attached to that that is in the process of being funded but haven't really got started up. But they want to make sure that any excess dollars is directly tied to services. And this is where the crisis intervention and jail diversion was mentioned, but Director Palmer kind of fell short of trying to dictate to regions that this is what you have to do, that you have to have a crisis a support system in place. But he says that DHS will obviously look a lot more favorable if some of those dollars are going into those types of things. And so I saw that as a real plus. And so all in all, Deb's in my conversation was centered primarily around that, feeling that the region is going quite well, and we're just waiting now to get further compliance. Then switching gears a little bit, as I mentioned with George earlier, Linn County had quite a few questions that I thought was very appropriate for our meeting, and a lot of it centered around the message that they had received from DHS that they were told to eliminate and downsize these RCFs, and they wanted to know whether that was true or not. Well, that's where we got a better explanation about, because of the funding, and George alluded to that if you have more than 16 beds, yes, you're going to have to, they do not meet federal requirements, and so therefore they would have to be downsized. And currently there are four of five counties that have submitted plans to reduce their RCFs that are greater than 15. And so DHS is working directly with those counties. But, you know, there's no timetable that says it's got to be done by, you know, December 31st of this year. The plans are in the works. And as you know, the issue then is, since they've been receiving the service, where do they go? What happens, and the need is certainly out there, and so they're working on that. The other question that I thought was interesting that I will be chairing with our region. It was could a region choose to pay for RCF services in their current environment if the regional board decides to do so? And the reason for that is, you know, they say that home and community-based services are not provided under Medicaid funding similar to our CLP program. The reality of that is it is possible that the regions could consider funding some of those kinds of services as far as DHS is concerned. So it's not there was nothing in the legislature in the legislation that actually said they couldn't do it. But the question is that in throughout the state that the core services must be funded at a level where it could be sustainable. And if you're having cash flow issues and challenges in funding, then to move towards having the RCFs available, which is a non-core service, then it probably should be downsized or eliminated. So I found that that was something that was interesting, and I was eager to see how that's going to happen. But all in all, there was the ongoing reason for DHS to work with us. I was told by Director Palmer that we, even at the county level or at the regional level, that they would be willing to get on a conference call, and we could schedule a time if we had questions directly for them. They would try to fit in and be able to communicate with us on any questions that we might have, either from a county or from a region on some of these issues. So that was also encouraging. So all in all, we will continue to do that every other month. And George, here would be something, again, I would suggest that if you think there are some things that your agency is needing additional clarification and so forth, that I could at least put on the table for them to consider. They may not be able to answer it directly, but they can refer us to different people in their agency that could answer some of those questions. So all in all, it's a good meeting. So other than that, that's about it.
Thank you. I just saw our counterparts in Johnson County approve driverless cars, so watch yourself when you're in Johnson County.
What kind of cars?
Driverless. So like the Google, they're thinking they're going to be on the cutting edge of all the research for those. Interesting idea.
Huh.
I'm glad that George didn't request that we put in an ordinance like that.
Okay. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future, and we've got a couple of guys here that would like to talk to us. So, gentlemen, you're going to put on your drainage district trustee hat.
Thanks for sitting through all that, guys.
So we're going to come up together, Eric Edler and Jim Lively, both from got a state center address. I know Jim lives in Story County. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm Eric Edler. I'm from State Center. I'm part of the Marshall Story District. I'm really glad you guys got involved with this project because we're actually look like we're going to get something moved forward and get it done. Excuse me. I'm going to be unable to be at the meeting tonight, so I just wanted to get some opinions out there. I am a landowner. My wife's a landowner. I've got several family members that are landowners. We are in probably one of the higher assessments of the landowners, and we are in favor of getting this tile project done. I know you originally had the option one of a 30-inch or the option two of a 42. Back in the 1900s, it called for a 40-inch tile. So it would be foolish not to put in at least a 42 at this point to cover the needs that we need to go with. I know with a 42-inch, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that was for a 3/8-inch rainfall. Right. I've talked with several other drainage districts in other counties. Wright County is one specifically. They don't put in a drainage district with less than a 1-inch rainfall capacity.
Wow.
So I think we don't want to skimp by on this tile. We want a minimum of the 42-inch. My only concern is, are we going far enough with the tile? Because you're taking the new tile up to where the 26 and the 20-inch connect. Beyond that point, the 26-inch actually goes up through my property and a couple other properties. We've got 6 to 8 blowholes in that 26-inch. if we don't replace and or fix those holes as we put this new tile in, we will have our new tile and the creek full of silt, dirt, and we'll lose everything we've tried to gain. As far as I know, that's the biggest issue with the blowholes. Beyond that, I don't know of any up the 20-inch. I've also got a farm up that direction that we fixed a blowhole on a year ago, and that's all I knew about. But up the 26, there is several up that line that need to be addressed as we do this project moving forward. I guess my only other concern is maybe we're moving a little too fast. We maybe need to get people a little more information. I do have a copy, and I assume you have them, of the assessments for the different landowners. Is there a possibility you could get those out to the people that are actually going to be paying for it? Because most of your opposition are coming from people that are going to be assessed $5 to $10 on a $100,000 amount, and you haven't heard anything from a lot of the people that are going to be assessed $2,000 to $3,000 to $5,000 on a $100,000 amount. And I think if we would get this information out to people, they would more realize that they really have nothing. I mean, as a landowner, you are responsible to take care of that property. We're in the district. We can't do anything about being in the district, and we need to maintain the district so we have drainage.
Well, by law, we've got to maintain it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to tell you, but I was a trustee on this board, and I'm one of the ones that tried to get it over because we could, as you can see from our last meeting, we have been able to get nothing done for years because of the people that come to the meeting with the opposition. And it's a sad deal because every part we delay it, we just cost more. I mean, there's going to be more expense the longer we delay this improvement, or it's not really an improvement. It's brought back to original condition at a minimum.
At a minimum, right.
It needs to be done. And I guess I just wanted to come here today so you knew what my opinion was. I cannot make it to the meeting tonight. I wished I could, but I can't. I've been out of town for a few weeks, so I'm sorry I'm here at the last minute. But that is my thought in the whole process. I'm all in favor of the 42. If not, looking into doing something with the 26, either replacement or it's going to have to be fixed, or we will go backwards and get a lot of silt and dirt.
Absolutely.
Down in our new tile. So,
Eric, I appreciate you coming. I've a couple questions. One, what's your thought on, do you have any feelings on the potential annexation of new property? I think on the downstream side of the district, and your thoughts on reclassification of the entire district.
Actually, I've got some property that would be annexed in. I don't have a big opinion on that because the Marshall County side of the whole district is, what, 3% of the acres? So right. The assessment is going to amount to about nothing. So I'm really kind of neutral on that. I know there are certain people that are really opposed to it. It really probably should have been brought up in a separate issue. I think everyone's confused at this point that it's going to be a combined issue, and that's part of the issues people are complaining about. What was your other?
Reclassification of the entire district.
Reclassification. I don't know if that's right or wrong. The people that are already in it know they're in it. Yes, it would be right to reclassify it according to the watershed, but you're going to have a lot of arguing, even though most of the people that are going to get reclassified are going to be annexed in and going to have a very small percentage of any payments that need to be made. So I guess I'm somewhat neutral in that. I guess myself and Jim, we're right down in the heart of it where we're going to be paying some of the largest assessments per acre because they say we're getting the most benefit. And I guess I hate spending money, but I'm a landowner and it needs to be done, and it's needed to be done for years. So we need to move forward. I'm glad you're taking it. I'm just wondering if we need to slow down a little bit, maybe do a little more research on that tile on up the line. And I hope, make sure our grade and everything is right. There's landowners on to the west that have lost, they're taking on a lot more water. I don't know if it's because of the tile or they're actually on the other side of the DNR property. We need to make sure when we do this project it's done right, we got the right grade, we're going about it properly, and we're not just doing a quick fix that's going to hurt us in 10 years again. We need to make sure it is done properly so that it's fixed for several years.
Well, I think this district's probably raised more questions than any other ones that we've had. We've got the DNR property and the county conservation property that are really not receiving any benefit from that because they've busted all the tile that goes through there. So, the question that we've getting now from them you know, why are we paying the assessment when we're not receiving any benefits? So that's the other question we've got. But
so you have heard from the DNR?
We haven't heard from the DNR. We've heard from our conservation director.
Right. Because, well, and I just combine them all, the DNR, the state, that's about 52% of our land in the district, I believe, that either the state or the DNR owns.
Right.
And I was surprised that we hadn't heard anything from them.
As far as I know, we haven't heard anything from the DNR.
I haven't seen anything.
But in the same regard, keep that in mind, and you'd have to look at a map. But like Stan Wilkening on the other side of that DNR property, they crushed all those tiles, and now he has no drainage. But he's in the district, so you are legally bound kind of to get him drainage.
Absolutely.
Which is another option you need to look at as to how to get. I mean, it's not just, we got to look at the big picture and make it all work together.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Jim, what do you have? Anything?
Nothing right now. I'm going to be at the meeting tonight.
Okay.
And, you know, my feeling is that my son and I, the people think my son and I are getting all the benefit of this, but I would say 95% of this water comes from above us.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And it's going to benefit everybody. And hopefully we put in a 42-inch tile, because I grew up on this farm, and for 50 years we've had holes because the tile was too small.
Eric, you mentioned that even when the district was put in, it was recommended that it be a 40-inch tile. Where is there records of that somewhere?
Yes, there is.
Because I haven't seen that anymore.
I don't have them with me, but originally the engineer report called for a 40 or 42 inch tile, and they only had funds for a 30.
They talked about it last time.
They only had the funds for a 30, which brings up another point. At the last meeting, you know, people were kind of saying, why hasn't this been fixed or repaired as we go along? We have, and I've been a trustee or was a trustee for several years, but we have fixed, but fixing did us no good. And every time we went to fix a hole, it cost us from $5,000 to $15,000. Because of the trouble we'd get into or the amount of tile we'd have to put in, and then it would blow up right next to it. So if you get that question, my comment would be, well, they kind of quit fixing it to save you money because we were doing no good. I mean, we could have went out there and stuck $50,000 a year into repairs, and we'd still be sitting here today with what we're sitting with. So that's a reply I would have to that question is, doing nothing was better than just blowing it away. So, unless you have any other questions, I just wanted to express my concerns.
No. Thank you for
Thanks for coming over.
Bellas.
See you tonight.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne?
Pass.
I just one thing, was happy to be able to represent the three of us again at the ribbon auction at the Story County Fair.
Oh, yeah.
So you gentlemen get your checkbooks out, and we were able to purchase a couple of ribbons from a couple of 4-8 youths and kind of made their day for them. So I was happy to do it. With that, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
What do I owe you?
$100.